Welcome to Worlds Apart. A decade after the end of the Cold War, the man who made it possible, Mikhail Gorbachev, bitterly remarked that the opportunity to build a new world order was squelched because every US president just had to have a war. He didn't live to see the current conflict in Ukraine, but isn't a new world order finally shaping out due to the use of force by Russia? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Rein Müllersen, professor emeritus at Tallinn University and a former advisor to Mikhail Gorbachev on issues of international law. Professor Müllersen, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being available.
Happy to be with you. Thank you.
Now, you've written before that professionally, at least, you have had three different lives, being born and raised in Soviet-era Estonia, then moving to Moscow to get your doctorate in law, and then moving all the way to King's College London and teaching there for quite some time. And that gave you a very versatile exposure to various systems, to various ideologies. And what I find very interesting is that, unlike many other public intellectuals of your generation, you are open about all and accepting about all parts of your professional life. Isn't it unsafe, at least in the West, to be so open about your connections, historical connections with Russia?
I have benefited from it professionally hugely, because I have at least three different viewpoints from which to observe the world. Estonian, a small country one, where I was brought up, and then Russia. When I went to Russia, I was taken to the army. I didn't
go. It was the Soviet Union at the time,
It was
right?
The Soviet Union in Moscow. I was an athlete, a very good one, high jumper even. And so I stayed in Moscow to jump there. And when I finished my career, I went to Moscow University and graduated from the law department and linguistics as well.
And so, you went all the way to, at one point, serve as an advisor to the president of the USSR.
Yeah, yes, it was at the end of the 1980s, beginning of the 1990s, exactly. And then I went back to Estonia, being the first deputy foreign minister, and for a while the foreign minister even. I was invited to the London School of Economics as a centennial professor of the LSE. I went to London and stayed there for almost 20 years, I taught.
Now, that period of very cosmopolitan life, which many of us experienced, has ended a couple of years ago. But I know that in 2019, before it actually ended, you received the Order of Friendship from the hands of none other than Vladimir Putin. And I'm sure that kind of association may have cost you some personal or professional relationship. And certainly it must have become a liability after February 2022. This life journey
has given me a lot professionally to see the world from different angles. But yes, I have lost friends on this way, and it is not easy even in the family with my sons, sometimes who were brought up in the UK, educated in the UK. We have different views. We are friendly, of course, but I have lost because of this order of friendship, for example, and now especially because I am not condemning one-sidedly the Russian invasion of...
But you are not embracing it either, because you've been pretty critical of some Russia's actions, which I hope we can talk about. But before that, I know that when you received that order, you said that international law, which is your main professional subject, international law as we know it could not exist without Russia. And ironically, 4 years later, its validity, its enforceability is indeed being called into question. Do you think international law as a universally accepted and upheld set of norms, does it still work? Does it even exist?
I believe international law is not only in crisis. There is a crisis in every domain of international relations and domestic affairs as well. But international law has collapsed, hopefully for a while, but it has. Because international law, and during this short presentation when I was given this order, was that why Russia? Because international law has been based on the balance of power, balance of interests, balance of power especially. But this balance of power disappeared in the world in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. So there was no one to balance the American power. There was a tendency of the emergence of a kind of world law, ruled from the one center. Mm-hmm. It is now called the rules-based international order.
Interesting. Yeah. So essentially, this phrase conceptualized what was in the works for some time even before that, because I think it's mostly the Biden administration that is using it very actively. They never ever use international law anymore.
No, no. You know, it was in the 1990s when these interventions of mostly Western countries in Africa, in Latin America, sometimes they were lawful, sometimes they were unlawful, for as it was in 1999 when NATO bombarded Serbia over Kosovo. Then, after it is interesting that after this war, then there was an international commission under the aegis of the EU, United Nations created, and they found it's interesting that the war was illegal but legitimate. Mm-hmm. So this was such a clear reference that though something is prohibited by international law, there are higher values like liberal values which can be protected even against international law. Mm-hmm. International law was set aside. Many other instances like the creation of international criminal courts, which if they were effective and impartial, this would have been if there were also a world government.
But Mr. Professor Mullerson, impartiality presupposes equality. I mean, and it presupposes that the law, I mean, I think that's the basis of the law, the very core definition of the law is that what makes it a law is that it's applied to everybody. When it's applied selectively, can you claim that it's still law?
It disappeared almost during these 1990s and then the Iraq war of 2003, which was also illegal. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it is interesting, I am living in the UK and the legal profession has been always very respected and impartial. And international lawyers in the Foreign Office gave their assessment of this invasion of Iraq in 2003, and they all declared that it was illegal. But now things have become different, even in the country where the rule of law was really respected, well, though politicians very often didn't respect international law.
You mentioned many wars that the West initiated and fought. So, theoretically speaking, people in the West know that war exists. Why do you think they're so much unnerved by this conflict with Russia? Because they have been exposed to wars before, to conflicts before.
Yeah, it is maybe not only a very good question, it is the most important question, why such a different reaction? For example, the Iraqi invasion of 2003 was called a shock and awe operation. So there was no shock and awe in Europe. There was this shock and awe in Iraq.
On the receiving end, yeah, exactly.
Yes. high-altitude bombardment and so on. All I mentioned already the war against Serbia. Mm-hmm. So high-altitude bombardment, no boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. Though in Iraq it was a bit different, mm-hmm. but all started with high-altitude bombardment. I don't think that it is only because it is in Europe. And therefore, of course, closer. It is also that somebody has challenged the power of the United States and collective West. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So, really, other challenges were minor ones. And now it is also a serious challenge. And I believe, therefore, the propaganda is, of course, very effective.
You know, another similarity with the Soviet Union, perhaps. Yeah. Now, Professor Millerson, we are not propaganda, but we have to take a very short break right now. We will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Known in Vietnam as the American War, the Vietnam War lasted for almost two decades and dragged in numerous countries.
Nhưng mà người cầm đầu của Mỹ nói rằng sang Việt Nam là như thế giúp Việt Nam. Và thì còn anh em thì không thống kê được.
Hundreds of thousands of American troops were sent to the country to bag the South Vietnamese Army.
Má bay rồi nó xả.
American soldiers murdered resistors mercilessly, burned down entire villages, and spread dangerous chemicals.
Cần nghĩ lại những người Mỹ, những người lính Mỹ rất trẻ và họ nhận thức không ấy.
Did the Americans ever fully acknowledge what they did, and are the Vietnamese veterans ready to forgive?
Cảm nhận là gia đình chúng tôi mất mất. Trong chiến tranh mà cả quê hương đất nước cũng bị mắc mờ trong cái sự đau thương của gia mình.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Rain Millerson, Professor Emeritus at Tallinn University. Professor Millerson, when you were receiving that order of friendship from the hands of Vladimir Putin, you also said that that period in history of unipolarity of the United States appointing itself as the indispensable nation was a fairly anomalous and temporary phenomenon in the history of international relations. But the Americans are clearly not giving it up without a fight. And I want to ask you, how far do you think the current confrontation between the West on one hand and Russia, possibly China, possibly some other disagreeing countries, how far do you think it may go?
I believe it will go quite far, and it is a tendency which will continue for decades at least, and maybe even longer. But I hope, and even this is a hope, so that the active phase of confrontation, especially in Ukraine, will end in the nearest future with kind of ceasefire and may compromises. But the new world order, if it emerges, some kind of order emerges, of course, I don't think that it will be world where there will be peace between all the countries in the world. No, there will be, in my opinion, the collective West, nevertheless, and then the rest, like Russia, China, Iran, India, African countries, who are not following this collective West. So as Adam Watson, who was a very distinguished British diplomat and academic, he wrote that no power who has had an opportunity to dominate has failed to dominate. It may be one of the iron laws of international relations of geopolitics. Therefore, it is even natural, probably, that the United States wants to continue to dominate the world. And there should be somebody who brings to senses this superpower, because what is an aberration, I believe, and in this speech I also mentioned, is that when the Brits dominated the world, it was not the whole world. But what is now, there is only one imperial power, really, one center which wants to dominate. And this is an aberration. It has never been so that somebody could have dominated the whole world. The world is real, and the Americans don't not even happy to dominate, but also they want everybody to become like Americans, to have the same values and to impose not only their interests, but their values also.
But, Professor Willerson, for that to happen, you know, a nation has to have enough resources, because domination is not just... It brings you not only advantages, it's a huge liability. And one of the reasons why the USSR didn't leave so long as it wanted it was because it simply couldn't deal with all the mounting domestic and external pressures. Do you think that this is something that the West takes into account, that it simply doesn't have the capacity, neither mental nor financial capacity, to impose its will either through military force or through soft power on the rest of the world?
Because can you imagine somebody in America, in Washington, talking like you now?
It's a simple cost-benefit analysis. I mean, like, if we just calculate...
They are not elected, then to be elected you have to... maybe in America, yes, they may come to senses because they have overstretched... they left Afghanistan recently, having 20 years.
Their government is about to shut down because they don't. They cannot pass the budget.
But they can still, because of having a dollar as a reserve currency, they can still exploit other countries, impose sanctions against their own allies in Europe, even. So they can survive, probably. But how long can they survive? I don't know. Maybe they also... probably the Soviet Union collapsed because of difference, only this overstretch in Afghanistan and so on. But the economic system was wrong, ineffective, and also there were so many different nations who wanted to have their independence.
Absolutely. And by the way, we have the same phenomena among the American, nominally American allies, because you have Saudi Arabia, you have Turkey, you have a number of other countries who are not striking out directly against the United States, but quite often go against American wishes, especially, let's say, the Saudis, who have the resources and can allow a pretty, free policy for themselves.
I believe, therefore, you have, especially in Africa, in France, Africa, as the French call it, they use this opportunity that Russia is fighting for its independent place in the world. So they also follow it. And this is probably very dangerous from the point of view of the United States and European leaders in France, like Macron, is very much worried about it. I don't see the U.S. collapsing as the Soviet Union, but maybe in the future they also try to limit their ambitions in the domination of the world. They are trying now to have allies in Ukraine that they have, but also in Asia against China. This is the most important concern for them. The war in Ukraine has deflected their attention slightly from.
Can you be focused on that for a moment? Because you did call Russia's military operation in Ukraine a possible geopolitical miscalculation. But when it comes to international affairs, I think it put many countries in a position when they have to choose very carefully and weigh the American pressure on one hand and their own resources, their own trade ties, their own geopolitical policies on the other hand. And many are choosing not fully independent path, but a path that is far more independent than it was a year and a half ago. Would it be fair to say that, as cynical as it is because of the loss of life on both sides, that multipolarity is actually being helped by the Russian operation in Ukraine and the American pressure?
When I said that this may be a geopolitical miscalculation, first of all, of course, it is a tragedy, personal tragedy. Because, you know, having lived in Russia, I visited Ukraine many times also. I have friends in Ukraine. Therefore, I didn't believe that the war would start between Ukraine and Russia.
And why
Russia.
Didn't you believe? I mean, like, it's a very interesting question. None of us believed. I have a Ukrainian last name. But shouldn't we allow for that possibility in order for the war not to happen?
It is exactly so. Because in my article in 2014, Ukraine, victim of geopolitics. It was published in China, in the Chinese Journal of International Law, and widely quoted now also. There I also warned that like the war between Georgia and Russia, there may be a war between Ukraine and Russia. So it was a professional approach. And I am maybe quoting Bill Burns, the current CIA director, who in his last book, he reproduces his emails to Condoleezza Rice, where he warns that acceptance of Ukraine and Georgia to NATO may lead to an armed conflict. Mm-hmm. So, he foresees this. And I would say one high-level Estonian politician, I am not naming his name now.
Good for him.
We had a conversation recently, and he told me that he had told in 2014 to the American ambassador in Estonia that NATO membership for Ukraine would be a red line, which may
lead.
Well,
and Vladimir Putin also made the same point in his many speeches.
He doesn't believe this Estonian politicians. I didn't believe because. Humanely, we didn't want it. We were in denial. Professionally, he as a politician, I as an academic and also a practitioner of international law, it was foreseeable that it may happen. It was so that as human beings, we didn't want to accept it.
Of course, as you said, it's a huge, huge tragedy. Now, Professor Millerson, in my introduction, I referenced Mikhail Gorbachev, to whom you served as an advisor on international law at the time when he was, I think, the first and only president of the USSR. And he was a strong believer in peace, but he defined it as not unity in similarity, but unity in diversity, in the comparison and conciliation of differences. Do you think that kind of peace is still feasible between Russia and the West? And if so, what would it require?
Not in the nearest future. I don't foresee. Things have gone too far. And it is not only earlier wars were not accompanied with such a propaganda as it is now, demonization of the enemy as not a human being at all.
Exactly what we saw in the run-up to the Second World War, by the way.
Yeah, and therefore it is very difficult to change the mind and say, okay, we were wrong there, now we are... We return to this drawing board of the 19th, at the end of the
1980s. But we don't have to go there. I mean, like, it's hard to come back to the original point, to business as usual. But do you think it's possible that both Russia and the West will say, it's very dangerous. Where we are is very dangerous. Can we just stop here, not go back, but stop where we are?
First of all, it is necessary to have at least a ceasefire in Ukraine and to start talking. Maybe talks are going on at certain levels, I hope, and there is some information on that. The Americans and Russians are talking to each other, even then, if this war ends and a kind of compromise is found, then such a peaceful world, Europe from Portugal to Vladivostok, I don't think that it is for the near future. And Russia also has turned to the East. This means that this common European home, of which Gorbachev spoke, then it is not possible in the nearest future. I'm not saying maybe in many decades it would be possible, hopefully, but as in my last article I say, the world has changed a lot since the Peloponnesian War and wars between Persia and Greece then. But I reread Thucydides, the Peloponnesian War, and other books more recently written on this conflict. Many things are the same. The technology has changed, that's true, but people think as Athenians thought when they imposed their views to other Greek city-states and so on. Things haven't changed
much. Yeah, human nature doesn't change, at least in the aspect that every nation and every human being desires dignity and respect from others, and that's, I guess, the main precondition for any lasting peace. We have to leave it there, but it's been great talking to you. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you for the interesting conversation.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.